Welcome in to another edition of the
voice crack. Gonna redo that.
Tony, you're gonna include this. I know it. 3, 2. On this edition of the Cubs Talk podcast, brought to you by Wintrust, home of Cubs checking with free ATMs nationwide, Gordon Whitmire, myself, Tim Stebbins, discuss how some of the flurry of the early offseason transactions in baseball affect the Cubs, from the signings of Eduardo Rodriguez and Noah Syndergaard to the extension for Jose Berríos up in Toronto.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
At Wintrust, we know true fans show their team pride every chance they get. With Cubs checking, you'll score a Cubs debit card so you can show your support every time you pay. Open today at Wintrust.com/CubsTalk. $100 required to open. Member FDIC.
Let's play two.
Way back. It might be. It could be. It is. Holy cow.
The fly. He scores.
Welcome into another edition of the Cubs Talk podcast, brought to you by Wintrust, home of Cubs checking with free ATMs nationwide. David Kaplan is off this week, but with me, Tim Stebbins, is our senior Cubs insider, Gordon Whitmire. Gordon, how's it going, man?
Tim, it's going well. Just recovering from the GM meetings. A week full of nothingness left me wore out.
Yeah, I would say I would make a joke about, well, all that sun and palm trees, but I know you were grinding out there, moving all over the place. So I don't want to take away from all the work you were putting in.
Talking to both GMs / team presidents who are going to try to win in the NL Central next year.
Yeah. Well, you talked about so the GM meetings and, you know, the nothingness and no transactions, which whether that's expected, as that's kind of how they sometimes go. We come back off that, and this week here, we've seen a couple moves that came off of that. Maybe semi-surprising, maybe not, but some pretty interesting moves, some big names coming off the board.
Yeah, dude, I'm surprised. I know we talked about this during the GM meetings last week about maybe not expecting much activity industry-wide before the CBA deadline of December 1st, which is just a couple of weeks away. Nobody anticipates they're going to get that CBA done, so we think there's going to be a lockout, and with that's going to come a transaction freeze, which means that the bulk of the free agent period is going to happen on the back end, January, February, shoot, some people think March. And so you're going to get this flurry of late activity, which you might have already kind of expected given recent markets. And now all of a sudden, I mean, it's not, I wouldn't go so far as to call it a flurry, but there are some pitchers, some decent named pitchers being picked off. And in one case, signed to an extension with his current team at a time of massive uncertainty over economic rules in the game. And so I'm surprised. I don't know about you.
Yeah, I mean, I think my last couple year perspective has been not to expect nothing in baseball free agency for at least the first month after the World Series. So pretty much, especially with the holiday, like Thanksgiving, Black Friday, everything. Like, I don't expect anything to come down in November. I think 2019 was an exception with like Gerrit Cole and such. But certainly with the backdrop of this likely work stoppage, seeing a couple guys who not only came off the board that were some of the bigger name pitchers, but guys with qualifying offers attached, where in my perspective, those guys, and we're talking about Eduardo Rodriguez, who got a 5-year deal with the Tigers, and Noah Syndergaard, who is headed to Joe Maddon's Angels on a $21 million deal for 1 year. Guys with qualifying offers who, my perspective, you know, with that and the draft compensation cost that comes with it, I feel like I would have expected those guys to maybe hang on the market longer, maybe not longer than everybody, but longer than this.
Yeah, that's been the trend, right? I mean, that's the same signal we got from the Cubs. And maybe that's part of what's skewing my expectation level, is that Hoyer made such a big deal. Jed Hoyer made such a big deal going all the way back to June. Well, July, when he started trading guys, that the CBA outcome was going to dictate a lot of how they went about their business this winter, which necessarily would seem to mean he's going to wait. And he suggested that the whole industry was looking at it the same way. Clearly not everybody is. The Tigers are aggressive. They went out and traded for Tucker Barnhart. They went out and got a pitcher they wanted right away. They're making some noise in what looks like an AL Central that has some wins available to it. Even if the White Sox go in as the prohibitive favorite, there's a lot of teams that are rebuilding slash tanking that you can pick up a lot of wins on. They can look at a playoff berth. You know, so them and the Angels already have a ton of money sunk into their roster and money sunk into their manager. They're almost by definition in a win now mode because there's not a whole hell of a lot else they can do. So go out and get a 1 year guy who could impact your one big area of weakness, your pitching. And Syndergaard, you know, when he's healthy, has been nothing but a horse. And he came back from Tommy John surgery late last season. So perfect for him, perfect for them. But it still seems fairly aggressive, even from just a couple of corners of the industry, to me.
Yeah, and for those listening at home, both those guys qualifying offer guys, which means to sign them, if you're not, Rodriguez came from the Red Sox, Syndergaard, as Gordon mentioned, the Mets. If you're any team signing them, you give up not only the price to pay them, but you surrender draft pick compensation in the next year's draft. So I think we touched on this last week, but guys like that with where the Cubs kind of are in this stage of their process likely didn't make sense. So seeing Syndergaard and Rodriguez fly off the board, my first thought from a Cubs perspective isn't that, oh, two potential Cubs targets are gone. But my reaction is that if guys that in my shoes, I would have expected to maybe hang on the market after guys without qualifying offer and draft compensation attached, if they're coming off the board first, and if you're a Cubs team that needs pitching, what does that mean for guys that could be targets who don't have that QO attached? What does that mean for how quick potentially they could come off the board, whether it's in a flurry from this month before a potential work stoppage or maybe after?
Yeah, right. And not only that, but if you're the Cubs, think about this. So maybe the qualifying offer scares you off on a Syndergaard. But beyond that Syndergaard type of a deal is exactly what you would think the Cubs could be in the market to do. Again, sans qualifying offer, but there are other guys out there without qualifying offers that they could be targeting and getting aggressive with. Does it mean they will in these next couple of weeks? I don't expect that from them, just knowing how they do business. And I'm talking all the way up to ownership. But maybe they should. If this is going to be their plan anyway, to go with short-term contracts and in some cases probably second-tier guys, go pick them off. Go pick them off now. Hoyer used to love to say there's almost no such thing as a bad one-year contract. So if there's guys out there willing to take a few of those, go get them. Or two-year deals, or two in an option, two in a vesting option. That way, if the guy meets the thresholds to vest his option, he's probably worth it and you got him for that other year. But this would be a way also to have because they're doing it anyway, right? They're going to build a roster kind of like they did in 2021, that if all goes well and they win, great, fine, you know, we'll ride it out. But in all likelihood, if it falters, if it doesn't work out just right, it's also built to blow up at the deadline and get more assets. So go be aggressive. Why not be aggressive? It looks like some of the rest of the industry is.
Ben, you also touched on it at the top. We touched on this backstage, but another pitcher who, not free agent, signed a deal. Jose Berríos with the Blue Jays. He signed a massive extension to stay in Toronto. And I feel like before the Cubs blew up their roster at the trade deadline, you know, they were in a position in there before that first long losing streak. They were in position to buy. And he kind of looked at someone, looked like someone who could make sense. He was under control through next season, 2022. And he also has that relationship with Javi Baez. And now he's locked up with Toronto long term.
Yeah, I talked to Javi about that. Actually, I talked to some people in the organization about it, too. Back in June, when the Cubs were hanging in the race and were considering themselves buyers, they were looking at Barrios. And they didn't know at the time. And actually, supposedly, I talked to somebody in Minnesota. I don't know how much I believe this. But supposedly, the Twins didn't know either whether they were going to want to sell. Because he's got another year of club control, as you said. So they were maybe going to try to extend him. But certainly, he was floating out there as a possible trade target for a number of teams. The Cubs were one of them. And I thought, well, his brother-in-law is Javi Baez. They both... The two of those guys were friends growing up, and they married sisters. So they're close friends to this day. And it made me wonder if Javi Baez was in a position to be in contract extension talks, which we thought at the time and which the Cubs were open to at the time, and certainly he was open to. Then, well, what better way to sort of incentivize him to maybe work with the Cubs on a deal than to bring in one of his close friends and then with the idea that you're going to try to extend him. Well, now we know what the cost would have been to extend him, which would have been roughly 18.7 a year. But the way that really works out is he had another year of arbitration left at a projected maybe $11 million. So it's kind of a 6 and 120 extension. So $20 million a year. Which, by the way, for who he is and what his upside is not ridiculous at all. $20 million on a 6-year deal for a guy at his age with his stuff and his track record, that would have been a really nice long-term piece to put into place. That, by the way, same number of years, cost less than John Lester did. Put him alongside Kyle Hendricks, and that's one hell of a start to your rotation, even as you have some guys coming. And if it means you keep Javi Baez, maybe even on a deal that doesn't have to go as high or as long as it might otherwise, now you got him. How does that change things? I mean, Tim, I know you and I talked about this. What if they had done something like that instead of just blowing everything up? What if they had bought in sort of a precision sense at the trade deadline? The Cardinals had the same record as the Cubs at the All-Star break. They were a half game different at the trade deadline. And we know what the Cardinals did. Now, it also took a massive, stupid, ridiculous winning streak. But the Cubs lost 12 in a row post-deadline. And that was entirely attributable to just how awful that roster was in the days after the deadline. So what if instead of 12 game losing streak at a time that the schedule got easier relatively, you know, they win 7-8 of those games. It's a whole different outlook coming on the other side of that. Who knows what happens? Maybe it doesn't play out this year, but as a big market team, you've made an investment in your future that makes 2022 look a lot different. It makes the end of this year look a lot different. You could probably even trade. I know I'm going too long here. You cut me off whenever you want. But they could have even traded Chris Bryant in that equation because you know you're not going to get him back, or you hang on to him and give him the qualifying offer.
Yeah, I think it's worth mentioning too. Like the Barrios situation, had the Cubs been buyers, would have been something really intriguing to watch because Toronto has a good system, farm system. They gave up their second, fourth best prospects. That's based on MLB.com's ranking. So what would have it taken the Cubs to get someone like that? Well, you're probably talking about someone like Braylon Marquez. And I don't think the Cubs would have traded Brendan Davis in any case. I don't know.
You know, and maybe that doesn't even do it, right?
Yeah. Sure. And that's just one guy. Like you're saying, like it would have taken more than that. And they might not have even wanted to give up someone like that with such upside and that they're high on. But it is interesting because, I mean, Jed Hoyer said it after the sell-off and he said there was no reason to go halfway, but there is that thought in the back of the mind that, like, you know, maybe you traded Bryant, maybe you traded Kimbrel and Bryant, maybe you just traded Kimbrel, but if you go back to that trade deadline week, I always go back to June or July 26th, which is the day Javi hit that walk off against Amir Garrett. He did the bat celebration. He trolled him, whatever. That got the Cubs record to 50 and 51. Well, the Cardinals were off that day and they were 50 and 50. And, you know, Jed talked about it in September. They were in different positions. Costs are a club control wise. They, you know, their corner infielders, unlike Bryant Rizzo going to free agency, were Arenado and Goldschmidt, who are signed to a multi-year deal. So it was a different situation. But what we're kind of talking about is, even if you traded one of those guys, Brian, for example, well, then maybe you find a way to, especially if you bring in Barrios, if we're talking about Javi, well, that's more of an incentivization perhaps on both ends to keep some semblance of this core together. And you go into 2022, not even 2022, you go into this winter, maybe in a position to go and we're going to go after this type of free agent that perhaps right now they might not be willing to do. And then you go into next year and, you know, you have Javi still, perhaps you still have Contreras. Like it's just a different look roster, right? And who knows, to your point, what happens down the stretch in 2021, like the Cubs were, you know, they had the 11 game losing streak with all those guys. So who knows what happens if you get rid of most of them. We saw what happened when they did get rid of all of them and lose 12 in a row, but who knows, man, like the Braves won 87, 88 games and won the World Series. If you make a couple strategic additions, you never know what can happen in baseball.
Yeah. And these guys like to talk about, well, you know, we don't want to be like the Phillies or the Tigers that hold on to all these guys and then go off a cliff. Not, you know, everybody resets, you know, we're not the only ones. Well, other teams reset, you blow up. I mean, the Yankees in 16 traded Chapman to the Cubs, and then, but they brought him back afterwards. They reset once they realized they weren't going to do what they wanted then to get under the luxury tax threshold, and then shot right over it again to be competitive using their resource advantage. The Red Sox reset periodically and then get right back up into competitive mode again. So that's one way a big market team can look at things, and the Cubs haven't done that, and they don't seem to be doing it now. All I'm saying is, like, one way to do it is to blow up all these short-term assets and then kind of, you know, pick your spots and rebuild. The other thing would have been to pick your spots in what you give up and then what you grab at one of two annual acquisition periods, the trade deadline and the offseason being those two. You strategic. Now, again, who knows if they're even able to get Barrios. But you get an asset that could be a longer-term asset. It's one way to keep one eye on today and one eye on tomorrow, which is what they always talk about doing, instead of just blowing it all up right now when it doesn't seem to be working. Look, when we talk about what St. Louis did, St. Louis was a 500 team at the deadline, the week of the deadline, and winds up – they got one of the reasons that they didn't sell off – well, I don't know that there were many guys they would have actually sold off, but one of the reasons they didn't sort of throw in the towel was because they knew they had some key guys that were going to come back from the IL down the stretch, and that did turn out to be a big deal for them. But they also added some incremental pieces to that roster, and they got really, really hot, which you can never – who counts on winning 17 games in a row? But – at the end of the day, when you're the Cubs looking ahead, so the Cardinals got that last wild card spot. Well, they won 90 games. So if you're the Cubs, are you saying, well, can we win 90 games to get that other spot? Well, you might not have had to if you put up more of a fight with the Cardinals. And if it looks like a different fight, you know, who knows what the Cardinals look like. The next team behind the Cardinals in the wild card standings were the Reds, and they won 83 games. So something in between there, if you're giving the Cardinals a fight down the stretch, is probably what it takes. And that might not have seemed all that outrageous to think of. And then, again, it's not that you're counting on that. It's that you're putting yourself in a position where you're still giving the fans a reason to buy a ticket. You're still keeping some of their favorite players. And you're putting yourself also in position to win next year. Putting yourself in position to win in the future isn't always about grabbing as many young, unproven prospects as you can. Sometimes it's about acquiring a long-term asset that's at a decent age range that fits a need on your major league roster, like a Barrios. And again, maybe it's not exactly Barrios, but that could have been the strategy too.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about all from the comfort of your home isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Yeah, I think I was thinking similarly. Like, we know the aftermath of that was you lose 12 straight games in the start of August, and they finished with their worst record since 2014, their first losing season since 2014. But the future ramifications of that are this division is kind of down. It's the Brewers. It is down, I should say that. The Pirates are rebuilding. The Reds, you talked about them having, you know, finishing right behind the Cardinals in the wild card standings. Well, the Reds are cost cutting. They traded Barnhart to Detroit, like you said. They put Wade Miley on waivers to not have to pay a $1 million buyout, opposed to picking up a $10 million option, which the Cubs picked up after claiming him. The Reds could have picked up that option and traded him. Instead, they're cutting costs. Nick Castellanos is a free agent. Based on what we've seen with the Reds, they're probably not going to be able to bring him back based on what he could demand in the open market, or command, I should say. So you're left with Milwaukee and St. Louis again. And you mentioned St. Louis. Well, to take nothing away from their season, well, they won 17 straight games to get to 90 wins. And, you know, if we're talking about scenarios with perhaps the Cubs sell off or trade deadline moves look different, maybe they don't win 90 games, let alone 17 straight, because the Cubs were part of that, I believe, in September. So point being is that next year we're looking at Milwaukee, obviously reigning division champ, St. Louis in this division. But
wait, let me push back on that just a minute. We're looking at Milwaukee. They might trade Josh Hader. They don't deny that they'll listen to anybody that wants to call on him.
Right. So that even adds further, you know, stake to the point. If they do that, then who knows? We don't know what this roster is going to look like. They have a lot of work to do. They've acknowledged it, especially on the pitching side. But who knows, based on whatever they wind up adding, how different it might have been had you kept on to maybe one of these guys. Obviously, like we said, they said there's no reason to go halfway. But if you kept the Javi, a Rizzo maybe, whatever, Schwindel.
I disagree with that. There is two reason to go halfway. It's harder to do. And that's the thing. In my mind, you're taking the easy way out when you say shit like that. Look, honestly, you could go halfway. The idea is being targeted. And then, yeah, maybe you're giving yourself less margin for error, but you're guaranteeing steps back doing it this way, and you're counting on your fan base to be okay with that because you're telling them what you're doing. I wouldn't be okay with that if I was paying ticket prices for this team, any ticket prices for this team. Honestly, you're a big market friggin' team. There, you can go halfway and still make progress exactly the way we're talking about. Target your moves. Be smart. Be smarter than the next guy that you think you are anyway. And so, you know, make some of these moves. That go ahead and trade Chris Bryant. Caleb Killian was just an all-star in the Arizona Fall League. Go get the guys you got for him, because you're not going to bring him back anyway. And maybe you try to win. Look what Seattle did, right? They traded their closer and got better and wound up missing the playoffs by like a game, maybe two games. Now they're in position to buy, and
Chris Bryant,
maybe Chris Bryant, maybe Javi Baez. They're looking at some serious upgrades and some spending this winter. And the Cubs could have used their resources in a way that maybe held on to a couple of their guys with the idea of maintaining them long-term, keeping them, and added maybe somebody long-term. Continue to be competitive in a division that is so generally top heavy. I'll just put it that way. There's always two or three teams in there. Sometimes there's three teams that are competitive, but there's always a couple of teams that are completely resetting or blowing stuff up. It's not what the AL East has been or was this year. It's not what the NL West was this year, even at the top. You've got the most resources of anybody in the division. You should be able to sometimes go halfway and continue to build, to continue to move forward as you go halfway.
Yeah, and to clarify for listeners, when I say that quote, that's me just reflecting or bring back that quote from what Jed said.
It's Jed's quote. It's not your quote. It's Jed's quote.
Yeah, I think we're going to go way back for months on this podcast. I said for sure I didn't expect all of those guys to get traded, and they were. I am not qualified to be a team president by any means. But
don't sell yourself short. I've met a lot of those guys.
Yeah, well, if it was my money to spend, this is my favorite game. If it was my money, well, I would have kept maybe two of those guys at least, but that's neither here nor there, I guess. But we talked about Berríos and maybe what it might have taken to get him. I threw out Marquez out there. Who knows? That's a hypothetical, but Marquez is still a Cub, obviously. And I think next year his role could be very, very interesting for David Ross.
Oh yeah, I don't think there's any. You wrote a story about that Michael Kopech comparison. Good comp. I mean, and probably where sort of the timeline on that is kind of Kopech 2021 into now 2022. So it'd probably take a good year for Marquez to put himself in a position to be part of the rotation if he gets there.
Yeah.
You brought up some other names too.
Yeah. I mean, I think like obviously the big thing is health with that comparison, and to reflect, like you said, with Kopech, he underwent Tommy John late 2018, missed all of the 2019 season, recovering, opted out of 2020, shortened season, came back in 21, and we saw it a little bit with the Crosstown series from a Cubs perspective, but obviously all year he was kind of that bridge guy and even a late inning guy, obviously sometimes too, for Tony La Russa, set in front of Liam Hendricks and later Craig Kimbrel. And he's going to be in the rotation in 2022 in all likelihood. And that's, to me, it's, you know, everyone's situations are different health-wise. Marquez had a shoulder strain where he missed all of 2021. 2020 was a really weird year for his development with the minor league season canceled, and he was at the alt site before the Cubs called him up, regular season finale, and that was the last game he pitched. But it kind of, to me, is, I don't want to say a model for the Cubs, but it's similar, like, right? Like, if Marquez is going to be on an innings limit in 2022, Jed said, which is understandable after, you know, he hasn't pitched a full season since 2019, and that was a career high in innings for him, and it was only 120 or something. But if he comes back healthy, for one, if he's healthy and effective, then that's for a bullpen that we always talk about, what do the Cubs have? Well, we know they have bullpen arms. That's another bullpen arm who can dial it up to 100. And if he stays healthy all year, who knows? You go into 23 spring training, and perhaps then that's a rotation candidate. And we talked about Killian. They have other guys coming up through the system that, when we're talking about Eduardo Rodriguez qualifying offer aside, getting a 5-year deal, maybe that's, as I kind of wrote in the story, which you can see on NBCSportsChicago.com, maybe these young up-and-coming arms are why this winter they're not looking necessarily at a 5-year deal. They want to see what some of these guys developmental-wise do in 2022.
Yeah, you're going to need, even if that's the plan, you're just going to need so much more pitching. And I still go back to the resources you have. One of the big advantages you have is the Cubs. I like the idea that they seem to have some guys coming and some big arms. And it's something that, you know, as you pointed out, we haven't seen for 10 years of this regime. So it's good to see that coming. They're going to need that. Long-term, you're going to need that. Ultimately, that was why they priced themselves out with this current core, was that they had nobody coming in the farm system to backfill and to fill some of the roster spots with guys that weren't making $1 million and $5 million and $10 million and $15 million. But your big advantage in this division and against most of the other teams in baseball is your financial muscle. And if you're not willing to use it, you're putting yourself at a disadvantage. You're taking a massive tool out of your toolbox, and you're giving, relative to that, an advantage to everybody else, to most everybody else. Now, they'll flex those muscles, right, when they get the roster together where it's going to be add a few pieces and we'll go all in. Fine. But in the meantime, you're still a big market team that's charging big market prices and with a fan base that's one of the most loyal in all of baseball, even among the big market teams, and has always been there for you. And they deserve more and they deserve better in between these windows. And there's other ways to do it. I mean, let's look at my scenario. I mean, again, Berríos, they might not have won the bidding war to trade him, and it might have been too much to do if they had tried to outbid Toronto. I'll give you that point. But they didn't even make that an option. Like, that was not even a plan B that they could have gone down, never mind a plan A. It could have been a plan, and you could have been, like, maybe jumping the market on him or looking at other guys that you could target in doing this kind of a plan. If you had, it could change a lot of the dominoes that fell, including Rizzo could still be on this team. Rizzo, a massive fan favorite, face of the franchise. Because what happens at the end of the season? If you don't trade him and you keep him to the end of the season, you give him a qualifying offer. What do you think happens if they give him a qualifying offer?
Oh, man, that's an interesting one. I guess it would have depended how he finished, because he had similar numbers, I think, with the Cubs and Yankees, where I don't know. I mean, if he finished,
let's say he puts up the number, because he did well with the Yankees, right? For the most part, most of that time, at least right away. Given his age, given his market value, I think he takes it.
I don't know if he would have taken it. I feel like he took that hometown discount almost a decade ago.
$18.4 million?
Yeah, I mean, I think it'd be a risk for sure. Like, if he got that and turned it down, there, like, we're talking about now, the fascinating part about his market being that he could get a 2-year deal, or some people think he could get a 4-year deal. So if he turns down 1 for $18 million and change, then in this winter, he might be looking at, like, what, 2 and $45 million, some people say. So it'd be a risk, but I don't know. I think he'd roll the dice to see what he could get out there.
I think of all the guys that would be in that position that were Cubs, he's the least likely to roll the dice. He didn't roll the dice initially when he signed that team friendly deal. He took the security, and knowing what they offered him last spring, low ball deal that he turned down, and maybe even having a clue as to that the market might not bear, you know, Goldschmidt money at, for sure, but maybe not even what he thinks he should have got. Goldschmidt obviously got 5 and $130 million a couple of years ago. What if the message to him is, hey, we're going to send you the qualifying offer, but we're willing to keep talking. I think he takes it.
That's what the White Sox did with Jose Abreu, right? And different stages of their careers, probably, I can't remember the ages, probably similar in age, early 30s, but I believe he got the QO. I cannot recall off the top of my head if he accepted it, but then he got a 3-year deal because he said, I want to be here when the winning starts. And that's, you know, he was, right? 2020, 2021, they make the playoffs, and it was like 3 and $50 million something, I think. So whether that's, you know, I don't know what Rizzo's range would have been. It's different teams, different stage of careers. But yeah, like that would have been I could see that for sure. Like, whether he accepts or declines it after not having, we always talk about the taste of the other side or the green grass or whatever, seeing different experiences. Like, if he's still here and this is all he knows, maybe he would have just, like you're saying, that would have just been the first option to stay longer after that.
Plus, unlike the contract extension offer he got in spring training, the qualifying offer all by itself would have represented a raise over this year's salary. And so you save a little face there, you get a bump in pay, and you start talking about the future at that point. And at that point, you're kind of past some of the pandemic economics of the game, and you're able to actually have talks that project a more normal landscape, which was part of the problem for a lot of these guys when it came when their time got real short with the club.
Yeah, it's an interesting what if. I think that's, if you look back on the 2021 Cubs season, 10 years from now, and however those guys, their careers go from here, I think that's still going to be the case. And interesting what if season. There's some housekeeping items too, Gordon. Just we know Greg Brown hired his hitting coach. They announced during the GM meetings, and a couple other assistants hired too.
Yeah, Johnny Washington, assistant coach, who apparently is some kind of Korean baseball cult hero for his coaching days out there, because Sahadev Sharma of The Athletic first reported that hire, and apparently his timeline was inundated with a whole bunch of Korean language tweets that he didn't know what they were saying. He thought he'd done something wrong, and went back and got him translated, and realized people were just upset that this guy was leaving. So he's kind of interesting. Then new assistant, GM, new GM, Tim, you talked to new assistant pitching coach, which is a position that didn't even exist before.
Yeah. Daniel Moskis. We'll have a story on that on the website, this week, he was with the Cubs briefly 2016 to January 2017 on a minor league deal, or he signed one, I should say, after the World Series. And, the Cubs failed him on his physical. He became a free agent, kind of bounced around a little bit, and wound up at Driveline Baseball up in Seattle. And he fell in love with their kind of philosophy on development there, and it sparked his interest in a coaching career. And, he almost landed again with the Cubs as a coach about 2 years ago, wound up with the Yankees as a minor league pitching coach. And now full circle, he is the Cubs assistant pitching coach, which is a new position after, I should just say a new position. And off that point, the Cubs, obviously Mike Borzello, the longtime pitching strategy coach, is no longer with the teams. And that was announced in October.
Yeah. And another one of their strategists, Brad Mills, also gone. Two positions that they expect to fill, but not necessarily with exactly the same roles. So, and this speaks to that. This is a slightly different role, and then we expect him to add at least one more. So it's interesting. And as everybody knows, when it comes to sort of player development and scouting too, Jason McLeod's out of the organization. So one of the initial three big shots that all came in, Theo, Jed, and McLeod, only Jed is left. And I wrote something last week about he hadn't heard from the Mets. He was about the only guy in baseball that seemed like I hadn't heard from the Mets. And now we hear that the Mets have hired a new GM. Finally, Billy Epler, former Angels guy, former Yankees guy. So, but Jason says he's got a few things going with some other teams, but a lot of changes over there.
It's if there was any, I guess going back to the trade deadline, maybe a good way to wrap it up. If there was ever any doubt, if these were Jed's Cubs, Jed has put his stamp on this team since he took over for Theo. And from the trade deadline to, I guess, starting with the non-tender deadline to the trade deadline to the front office makeover, and further, it's been a whirlwind of a year, I guess.
Okay, before we go, let me just ask you a prediction. So we've got less than 2 weeks to go, right? I think less than 2 weeks, maybe 2 weeks before a possible transaction freeze. Do the Cubs sign anybody of substance at all? A big leaguer.
I was going to ask you this question. So I really appreciate me getting the one to be the one to put my name on it. Yeah, I'm going to say yeah. And I have no idea off that point. Who, like I said, Carlos Rodon could be a fit on the last podcast, but as a Boris guy, I don't anticipate that being a quick market. But I'll say yeah, and I don't know who, but I feel so wait, like.
What's your rationale for that? Why is that?
Why they might?
Why? Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like I don't know if these Syndergaard and Rodriguez moves are necessarily outliers, but if the market is moving at such a pace. I'm not saying the Cubs are going to go and, make their biggest move of the winter in the next 2 weeks, but I don't know. I feel like we could see something of substance where not necessarily a minor league deal, not a minimum, but I don't know. Maybe there's a mark. Like we've seen a couple pitchers fall off the board. Maybe it's a pitcher. And actually, I'll say I think they will sign a pitcher in the next 2 weeks. I could be totally wrong, and I will acknowledge that come December 2nd or whatever, but I've got a weird feeling. So we'll see.
I would have felt 99% confidence on this prediction before all these moves these last few days. But I still think, you know, they've already picked up Wade Miley, and I think they're a little financially skittish right now anyway. And I think the CBA issue gives them cover to just wait. I bet they wait. I bet they don't sign somebody.
Yeah, I feel like we could play this back in 2 weeks. So I'm going to sound very funny, but we'll see. Well, anyway, though, that puts a wrap on this edition of the Cubs Talk podcast, brought to you by Wintrust, home of Cubs checking with free ATMs nationwide. For Gordon Wittenmeyer, for our great producer, Tony Gill, and for David Kaplan, who will be back next week, I'm Tim Stebbins. We'll catch you next time.